Hey, Don, how are you doing today, sir?
Good. How's things in Kentucky there?
They're doing very well, and you'll be in Kentucky not too long from now, as I understand.
Looking forward to it, yeah. Always a big time. Got a lot of Manic fans there.
You are, for me, I can use some of your songs, some of your lyrics, some of your albums as part of the soundtrack of my life. How many times have you been told that in your 30-plus years?
I tell you, we see it out in the crowd, you know, they sing along and just high-fiving each other, and sometimes a few tears in their eyes, a song might remind them of somebody that they have lost or something, but it's the greatest job in the world, bring that kind of joy to people, you know, so we're still happy to be here doing it after all these years, and we look at it as a big triumph. We go out there and win every night, you know.
We have a program on Sunday mornings called In the Studio with Redbeard.
Yeah, I remember Redbeard.
Yeah, and you all have been on there several times, but the unfortunate part is you've got me by just a couple of years, and so anytime he plugs these things, they're always the 30th anniversary or the 35th anniversary. And so you've got an album that just not too long ago, one of your popular albums hit 35 years old, and I thought, no way.
I see that too, Stephen. I tell you, I look back and think, well, you know, I knew the job was dangerous when I took it, you know. But it's great to be able to have created a longevity and a brotherhood. That's what we've started to do in the first place. We were neighborhood guys, made all our mistakes in public, you know. So most people think that Hold On Lucy was the first album. That was actually the fourth album, Wild Eyed Southern Boys.
Right.
And so, you know, people don't realize it. They don't just lay it right in your lap. It's not that easy. It's something you have to absolutely accept a lot of failure first. And because people don't know who you are, and they don't really care whether you live or die, you know. So you got to go out and make them listen to you. So we were able to finally break through and get on the radio and all that, but it's a challenge. It was a challenge. That's something I highly recommend. I've told younger guys, if you want to play on the weekend, it's a great outlet, you know, have a great time doing it, rehearsing with your buddies and everything, but when you try to eat from it, that's a whole other story.
Well, and yeah, because you're talking about starting out, you and some of the guys that got together to try to form the band in the first place, it was like a lot of bands do now. Y'all were in a garage and trying to hammer everything out.
Well, you get the cops call on you in the garage, and we have to start looking for a shack to rehearse in somewhere in the middle of nowhere, you know. And so it develops from there. You save your money and pay some rent on some little place to rehearse and try to write songs. And, you know, we came from Jacksonville, Florida. That's
right.
All the Southern rock bands, you know, Molly Hatchet and Lynyrd Skynyrd and the Allman Brothers, there were four naval bases there in Jacksonville. We all played sailors clubs. We were 15 years old. We make $100 a week playing a sailors club. It's big money, you know. So we learned all those songs, the cover songs of the day, radio stuff, hits, and just the structures and the fundamental foundation of songwriting. And we started seeing where because it really is a craft. There's a A section, a B section, and a ramp up in the chorus, and a bridge, an outro, and that kind of thing. So you start seeing where the payoff is. You start fashioning things yourself, and you do that for a few years, and then you get cocky, and you start thinking, well, I can write my own songs now. And that's when you go star for the next 10 years. So that's the part I don't recommend.
Well, you all certainly hit it big. And speaking of Hold On Loosely, if folks go to your all's Facebook page, how surprised were you? And I'm sure this has happened before, and I think I've seen it like in TV shows and stuff where they reference a title of your song or lyrics to your song.
Yeah.
But this Pirate Mike cartoon was absolutely hilarious when they're asked about A Vice of Love.
Yeah, and he says, our website guy sent me that. That would be funny. So, you know, you made the big time when you're in the comic strip. You know? So, yeah, he said his son was asking him about the advice for love. And he said, yep.
Here it comes.
Hold on loosely and don't let go. If you cling too tight, you'll lose control. And he said, wow, that's pretty profound. And he said, behold the wisdom of 38 Special.
Yeah, I saw that. I got a good kick out of that a couple of days ago when I was starting to look around. And speaking of your Facebook page, something else too, and you were talking about all of your time down there in Jacksonville and in Florida. Your former stage manager, Larry Steele, has written a book about all that time down there.
Yeah, he told me a couple of years ago that he was going to write a book. I'm like, what are you talking about? You know, but he toured with us all. We went all around the world, play guitar, see the world, went to Japan and Europe and all. So he's got all these stories in there, and he wanted me to read it before he published it. And I said, well, there's nothing really earth-shattering in there as far as any, you know, hedonism or anything like that. So I'd go ahead and publish it. But, yeah, it's pretty interesting. You know, he's got a lot of old stuff. I don't know how he remembered all these things. I've got a few brain cells left to remember those things. But he catalogs dates and times and shows and everything. I don't know what he was doing, keeping a diary back then, I guess. But, yeah, it's called As I Recall. That's what the story of the beginnings of Jacksonville music scene and the, you know, formative years. And like I said, we all came. You could hit a 7-iron and probably pretty much hit every Southern rock musician in Jacksonville that came out of there. We were all within just a few miles of each other. I mean, I'm talking about Dwayne Allman right down the road, Daytona, all those guys. I guess we all owe our career to the Navy because we played Sailors Club as young kids, you know.
Right. So that's available now, and when you all are back out on the road, not too long ago, you've added more dates, and the list keeps going and going. How much different is it now that you're older guys and can take a little bit more control over everything and do what you want to do instead of it being more driven by other people back in the 80s or so? How much different now is it touring than back in the day?
It's a bit different. You kind of get on a treadmill there for a while when you're contractually obligated to keep putting material out, and we still do 100 cities a year. Back then we were probably doing 150, 160 a year, but back then we'd go out and not come home for 3 months. You know, but now we go out and do three or four shows in a row, cities, and then go back home and be home 3 or 4 days and go back out. So we're able to kind of, you know, channel it that way. And of course, you know, we've quieted down on any of the, we have to pace ourselves now, you know, but we get out there like a team and go be triumphant every night. The show is the most important thing to all of us. We know the presentation would be that is the top thing. And you go out there and be explosive and be triumphant and line those hits up one after another. It's a ride. We take the crowd for a ride from the beginning. We start really big. We look at it as a graph. You know, and you keep climbing, start big, keep climbing. And right around the middle, you give them a little break with the ballad Second Chance. That was a big hit for us back in the 80s or 90s, early 90s. And then we just keep climbing higher and higher with this explosive finish, and people are screaming and exhausted, and we're exhausted along with them, I guess. It's more bang for the buck, I guess, right?
Yeah, one of the surprises, of course, I knew you all had a couple of number one hits and many top 10 hits, but it really floored me over the years that you all were putting out records that Special Forces made top 10, but that's as high as albums actually went on the top 200 chart. That was really, really surprising. I thought you all would have had at least a number one album in there in the heyday.
Yeah, competition is really thick, really heavy once you get down at those numbers because, you know, everybody's vying for your position. They're trying to sharp elbows, you know, try to get you out of the way so they can be, you know, number 9 or whatever. But we look at each one of those songs. We watch the singles climb, and someone would fall off at 14 and say, well, you know, you got to be thankful for that because it had a life of its own and it represented a time in our lives. And it really is a recording of a time in our life. Most of the songs came from true experience. Caught Up in You was about a girl I was dating at the time, and I was busy and working all the time, and I didn't have any idea of a note going on the next album. We were contractually obligated to have something out in 6 months or so. And I said to her, I said, I just can't get any work done. I'm just so caught up in you all the time. It was just simple as that. And you have antenna out for that. You think, hey, that's a pretty good sentiment, pretty good title. We can fashion something around that and be positive and all major chords and that kind of thing. And Hold On Loosely was another time, was a true experience. I had I'd gone through a bad time in a marriage way back there, and I wrote that with my friend Jim Peterick from Band Survivor. He wrote Eye of the Tiger, number one around the world and all that. But I was at his kitchen table, and when you got together to write songs, you start discussing a few things, you know, because it was all kind of relationship-oriented things. And he said, that's how you been, you know. I said, well, you know, I just kind of have some trouble. I said, what is it about people that can't, they want to change the other person. They always want to keep them under their thumb or you know, they will give them space to be themselves. And I had a notebook that I had written down. And I said, and it's a very insecure thing when you're songwriting, when you have little bits of pieces of things. You know, you don't know if they're really good because it's just you, you know. So it always takes the other guy to say, you know, that's not bad. We could, you know. So I said, what do you think about this title, Hold On Loosely? And he said, oh, yeah, but don't let go. And that's the first thing that he said. And it was the perfect little bookend, the perfect little couplet. And we were off to the races from that. And we just wrote a simple story with a good piece of advice that it still stands today. People have come up with it. You know, it was just so clearly written that, I mean, I don't want to take any credit for saving people's relationships, but people have come up and said that really meant a lot to our relationship, you know, that, you know, we'll let each other be themselves and celebrate their differences, you know. So that's an anthemic song that came up a long time ago, but out of something negative came a good positive message, you know.
Well, you've done a lot of good things, and I'm sure you've done a lot of fun things being the big-time celebrity that you are, but I will go back to 2008. One of my favorite recollections of you would be a game show, Meatloaf, Rockin' a Hard Place. You remember that?
You saw that?
Yes, on DirecTV.
Yeah.
I may have been one of the five, but by golly, I love that.
He wanted everybody to call him Meat. We called him, how you doing, Meat?
And remind everybody of your celebrity opponent on the other side of the stage.
Oh, that was Eddie Money. Yeah, Eddie Money and his band. I think his daughter was on there.
Yep.
You know, yeah, we toured with Eddie for a long time over the years. You know, what's funny about that game show is that they had miscalculated. We had won that game. At the very end, as their credits are rolling, they're raising, you know, cheering Eddie Money because they had miscalculated. But, you know, it was already aired. It was over with. But, you know, we had won. We had the most points. And it was all trivia, wasn't it?
It was trivia.
Music.
Music.
Yeah. History, right, yeah.
That came up, and as going over things, that was actually the second episode of that series.
Yeah, they were shopping that game show around. I remember them. They would do, well, you know how these game shows, they do all of them in about 2 days. You know, they tell people you change clothes and come back. The winners are coming back, you know. Family Feud, all those things.
They all
come back that same day. Yeah, right.
Is that one of the most notable fun things you've been able to do? Using the quote celebrity wise, be on a game show.
It was fun. We did some talk shows and things like that. It was fun. We were on Letterman a long time ago, and we did the Today Show. Remember Jane Pauley and all that.
Oh yeah, Brian Gumbel.
All that. Yeah, Brian Gumbel. Yeah, we did all those things. The main thing has been with us in the live shows. You know, we go out. We've got some big memories of the Meadowlands. We had been told by we've always played up in this, the Northeast for a long time, and Bill's big fan base up there. We kept coming back. Anyway, the option was to go into the Meadowlands Arena and headline, and we had, you know, our own advisors, managers, accountants, and things that said, "Well, you don't want to go and embarrass yourself because there's 22,000 people seats in that place." You know, you might just sell half the house. So you want to maybe take a smaller venue. We're like, no, we really think we can do this. We can. And so we went in there, and buddy, 22,000 people came out and sold it out. It was a big triumphant night for us. And it was one of those memories for us that it was a milestone, a benchmark for us, you know. But that was we've had some funny things where we have astronauts wanted to come up on our bus, and you know, it's like, then we were playing Houston, you know, and they used to wake them up in space, you know, with music. They'd
right.
play music. So our one of our songs was debuted in space, waking the astronauts up.
Oh my goodness!
They were knocking on the bus door after the show. Can we come off the bus? They're like, you know, had their little jumpsuits on and everything. And it's like, geez, can we come up on the shuttle? But it was another time we opened for Kiss back in the 70s, and we were their opening act for that year. Their largest, biggest year they ever had. I think it was $400 million they grossed or something.
Wow.
And we were the little opening act nobody ever heard of, you know. But every city they would have, the radio stations would have these Kiss face contests.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody would paint their face like their favorite Kiss character and come to the show, and they win a prize, whatever. Well, we would come out as the opening act. So the first 80 rows or 100 rows is nothing but grease paint, Kiss faces staring at you. So it was like Twilight Zone or something.
We certainly look forward to you entertaining us in Owensboro at the Big O Music Festival in August. As usual, I can only imagine you'll throw everything in but the kitchen sink, and that too, if you can find one.
It's a large time. We've always been known to bring that party to people. So people, they come out and get that big release, and we go out there to win, and everybody make it out, we're going to have a big time.
Sounds good. Good talking to you. Good luck in all your future endeavors, and hopefully we'll see you on another TV game show down the road.
Yeah, you too, Steven. Thanks very much.
All right. Thank you, sir.